98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. Brought to you by Collins Comfort Masters, proud home services partner of the Arizona Cardinals. 4 o'clock reset.
Top stories of the day here on the Burns and Gambo show. And I'm going to go off script for just a moment just to give a shout out to the kid, Gavin Weir, the Little League pitcher who threw another no-hitter today.
South Dakota, baby.
World Series. 37 and two-thirds innings pitched in his last seven starts. He's given up one hit and struck out 100 batters. 100 strikeouts, yep. No earned runs,
incredible.
One hit allowed in his last 37 innings pitched. Go get him, kid.
Man,
that was pretty impressive.
You throw in 71 to 73 miles per hour at that distance, it's hard for anybody to get a hit right there.
He sure is. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, the great state of South Dakota takes down California.
Big time.
Woo!
Robert Alford, not at Cardinals practice today, and according to Cliff Kingsbury, he could be headed to the COVID-19 reserve list.
Robert may be in the COVID protocol. We're holding him out to see how that plays out.
It sounds like there's a little uncertainty about the cornerback and whether he's actually got it or not, whether he's going to be on the list or not.
Brings up a point that you've been on all offseason. The depth at cornerback is a major concern for you.
Yes.
And
major concern.
I mean, just anything, right? It's not just injuries. Okay, here's COVID. What if you miss 15 days like Andy Isabella did?
Yeah. Admittedly, Byron Murphy's made me feel better about that.
Byron Murphy's made us feel great about it.
Marco Wilson's made me feel a little bit better about the depth of the cornerback spot. So maybe my concerns about it going to get a little alleviated with the season coming around. But yeah, it's been a concern of mine basically since the offseason started. Back in March, I was worried about whether they had enough.
I think they're good 3-4 deep. It's just after that. What do you have at 5, at 6, at 7? What's on the practice squad? What's available in case you need a guy?
Yeah, for me, I think I'm more worried about just the age and the general ability of Alford and Malcolm Butler to be able to play the whole season. Because if those guys can't, then they really start getting thin. Cliff also mentioned today he's still not sure how much, if at all, the starters will play on Saturday in the final preseason game of the year.
I'm not sure yet. We'll know after tomorrow's practice and decide, what's best for us.
A lot of people who believe that Kyler Murray should just hang him up for the rest of the preseason.
Listen, I just can't wait till after this game is over because then nobody's going to ask Cliff about Kyler's status for the game. Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? The season opener. What's the chances, Kyler? You going to play him a series, Tuesday? I just can't wait for this to be over. What is it, Saturday?
Saturday. Yes.
I mean, come Monday, we no longer have to deal with questions about Kyler's availability for meaningless football games.
Come Monday, it'll be all right.
Yeah.
Trevor Lawrence was named the week one starter for the Jaguars today. Teddy Bridgewater will be the starting quarterback for the Broncos. It was announced by Vic Fangio. So a couple of quarterback decisions, one which wasn't surprising at all, and that was Trevor Lawrence.
I'm really excited for the opportunity. It doesn't really change anything, though. Still got the same task in front of us. Got to get a lot better individually as a team, as an offense. So just looking forward to going to work this week. It brings some clarity, which is nice going forward, but it really doesn't change much. But, yeah, I'm really excited for the opportunity, grateful for it.
Interesting that Bridgewater got the gig in Denver, though.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the Trevor Lawrence thing was just a no-brainer. I mean, he's what he did in college. I mean, you had Gardner Minshew there. So I think with that, there was a little competition because Gardner's not bad. When Bridgewater was in Minnesota, there was a chance his career was going to be great. I remember guys crying that when he got hurt, just in tears because they would prepare to have such a great season. The fact that he beat out Drew Lock, maybe it's a surprise to some. I mean, it's possible some people thought Drew Lock was going to beat him out.
Finally, from the NFL, running back Sony Michel traded by the New England Patriots to the LA Rams today for a fifth and a sixth round pick in next year's draft. But then I read that if they get a fourth-round pick back as compensation for losing one of their players, that it's the fourth-rounder instead that will go to the Patriots. The Rams do not care about their draft picks, very clearly. They do not care about them.
No, and they're decimated with injuries, and the Patriots have a lot of running backs. But interesting, You said it. He was picked, what, one pick after Lamar Jackson?
One pick before Lamar Jackson. One pick before.
Lamar Jackson's a young quarterback on the rise who's going to make millions and millions of dollars in this league. And he has a running back who's, I just got traded for a fifth and a sixth round pick.
Yeah, that, but it does help bolster a division rival who obviously had injury problems at the running back position. Our top story of the day, though, we'll circle back to the preseason
finale.
The Cardinals
better beat Sean McVay this year. You've got to beat him once, man.
Yeah,
can't
do.
Stand losing to the Rams.
I laugh, but it's actually not funny at all. Yeah, you not only have you not beaten them, man, they've handed it to you.
Those guys,
the season finale last year, but they've handed it to you.
Yeah, those guys are friends. I almost feel like it's the Lute Olson, Bill Frieder thing here, where Sean McVay's Lute Olson and Cliff Kingsbury's Bill Frieder. You start doing commercials together?
I hope not. I don't think it quite works that way in the NFL. As far as this preseason finale coming up, Andy Isabella, Cliff Kingsbury had said that it was going to be a big week for the young wide receiver going forward since he's missed all that time. How is that big week going so far?
He had a nice day. I mean, just coming back from his second protocol stint. I mean, I think it's 14 or 15 total days that he was forced to miss, which is unfortunate. But, he's fast and he's productive. He knows the system. I thought he played with confidence today and had a really good day.
But it doesn't seem like anybody on this roster has really challenged Andy Isabella, despite the fact that he's missed 14 or 15 days because of COVID.
No. You brought this up a couple of times. The guy that may challenge Andy Isabella or may take his place, maybe somebody that's getting cut from another team in the next week. That could be the guy.
That could be the guy who takes the spot.
Yeah, the guy might not be here. The guy may be somewhere else. There may be a wide receiver that they like better than Andy Isabella.
Yep.
That's on another team that gets cut. So you got to watch out for that. That's a possibility. I think Isabella makes the team. I think he's on the roster. But with these cutdowns, you just never know. I mean, there's always somebody's got that a GM has a soft spot for, because I really wanted that guy and I wanted to get him in the draft so bad and you didn't get him and now all of a sudden he's available and you just can't resist.
Yep, I think more than anything, the only other thing I would worry about if I were Isabella is that they keep five wide receivers and not six, because I think then he doesn't make the team. But I think if they keep six, he makes it, and those final cuts are due in a week, next Tuesday. So we'll know whether he's on the final cut. But, man, I would not – I would continue to rent if I were Andy Isabella, and I would not buy even if I make the roster a week from now, because you just don't know who's going to get cut around the league. And I would imagine you'd be one of the last guys in.
I think he's the number one guy to look for in the game on Saturday. Go catch five passes, man. Go catch five passes. Go break a big one. Go show them that you've earned the spot.
I think you're right.
Number one guy.
I think
even more than Eno and Ward. It's him.
I think you're right. I think he's the number one guy. Speaking of Ward and Eno, Ward and Eno, or Jonathan Ward and Eno Benjamin. Today, Jonathan Ward talked about how good of friends they are off the field and how odd that is given they're competing for this roster spot. Cliff today suggested that Saturday will certainly be part of the equation to decide who wins the running back three job between the two of them.
Yeah, it'll be comprehensive throughout camp, but for both those guys to get the biggest share of touches for the first time probably since their college days will be important to them and to see how they handle it and how they respond.
And he meant the biggest share of touches in the context of Saturday's preseason game. They're both going to get a lot of work, and that might be another thing to watch on Saturday to see if a clear cut, okay, that guy is obviously the number three running back kind of a situation emerges from Saturday.
You think
game.
If it's that close, they can mix it up where one guy's active on one week and another guy's active on another week to keep both guys fresh?
Sure, they could. I mean, I don't know if you need to worry about keeping them fresh. They're probably not going to get a lot of attention.
They're not going to get a lot of attention. If you feel like both guys earned a spot and you want to give those guys some playing time and they're both, special teams players, just wondering if it's possible that both guys end up dressing at times during the season.
I would imagine it's possible, but it's not. They're not in the business of handing out participation ribbons for NFL rosters.
Nope.
You have
to earn it.
You're the best guy, and if you're the best guy, you're the best guy. No matter how much we want the other guy to play, if you're the best guy, you're the one who's going to play. As always, you can text us your thoughts on the state of the Cardinals going into the preseason finale on Saturday. The FanDuel text line is wide open and available to you at 620-620. You can text us whenever you want on the FanDuel text line. And as always, we'll read the best ones on the air. The Pac-12, Big Ten, ACC have all formed an alliance with each other. But for fans of the Pac-12, how does that impact what we're going to see every Saturday? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Back here with you on the Burns and Gambo Show, and joining us right now on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line from the San Jose Mercury News, leading Pac-12 insider, frequent guests here on our radio station on all the different shows. We love his insight. John Wilner, who joins us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. John, I hope this call finds you well. Thanks for coming on with us for a few. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You bet. Following you on Twitter during yesterday's Alliance announcement, and the one thing I really took away from you on social media and then reading your work on the San Jose Mercury News is that yesterday's announcement, the most important part about it wasn't even said or spoken by either of the three conference commissioners, and that's that basically these three are now a voting block against the SEC to make sure that nothing gets pushed through that they don't want. I mean, that's in essence the most important part of what was announced yesterday, and yet none of that was talked about, was it?
No, I mean, you know, they're really limited in what they, in any kind of specifics, right? Both just for political purposes, and the fact that there's, you know, there's no binding agreement. So you don't want to say something and then have the other party bail out or whatever. So they were fairly limited. But on the immediate matters, that is number one, is, you know, making sure that ESPN doesn't end up owning all 11 playoff games when the event expands to a 12-team format. And the issue is the next meeting is in late September. So they had to kind of get this alliance put together and get everybody on the same page by then. That's their first deadline. You know, these non-conference games that they're talking about with the scheduling, like USC against Clemson or whatever, that's going to come later, probably in a few years. But number one on the to-do list is to get them aligned on this playoff situation to prevent ESPN from owning all of the games.
And let's talk about that, right? Because ESPN has exclusive rights to SEC football, $300 million a year for the next 10 years. That's before Texas and Oklahoma even get in the picture. So I understand that. What is everybody so worried about, though, if ESPN does get all those playoff games?
Well, that $300 million, that's only for the SEC game of the week. That doesn't include all the other SEC games.
Right.
I mean, they're going to be close to on $1 billion in TV money once Texas and Oklahoma get in that league. So basically the situation is the current contract goes through the 2025 season. If they want to expand the playoff before then, ESPN has exclusive negotiating rights. The only way to, unless ESPN agrees, and I'm skeptical they would, to basically open it up for all bidders, Fox, NBC, CBS, Turner, Amazon, you know, is to wait till the next contract starts with the 2026 season.
Yeah.
Because otherwise ESPN could block it. But the reason the Pac-12 wants to open it up for, you know, multiple bidders, you know, like the NFL, right? NFL playoffs are on four different networks. Pac-12 thinks it's healthier for the sport if there's more than one TV network involved in broadcasting the postseason games, especially when you've got 11 postseason games, right? So if they get all those other networks involved and they each have got a piece of the postseason, then they're more motivated to get involved in the regular season.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the amount that there's a competition for the supply and the price goes up.
John Wilner from the San Jose Mercury News, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, talking about Pac-12 athletics and football in particular with yesterday's announcement of the alliance. Shortly thereafter that announcement, George Kliavkov, the commissioner of the Pac-12, spoke about a decision possibly coming by the end of this week as to whether the conference is going to expand or not. Reading between the lines and between some of the other things he said and that they said yesterday, is it likely or unlikely that the Pac-12 will announce their intentions to want to expand on Friday, if indeed they hold themselves to that timetable?
I mean, I would be very surprised if they expand. I mean, there's a lot of reasons. Number one is they don't have any really good options, right? The Big 12 schools don't really fit institutionally in the Pac-12, and I'm not sure that the football teams are going to bring any additional revenue. But the other thing is this alliance was formed, you know, the foundation is to create stability in major college athletics after the Texas and Oklahoma thing. So the Pac-12, he's going to form this alliance to provide stability and then turn around and raid the Big 12? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. So I would be very, very surprised if they expand. And you know, a lot of it is just, they look like hypocrites if they did.
Yeah. I spoke with some people at the universities here, you know, ASU, U of A, and you know, one of the things is that the Pac-12 geography challenged, right? Geographically, they are challenged. They're not the Midwest or the South. There's not many great teams out West. And then, you know, who's making the decision? It would be, it's not the ADs. It's not George, the commissioner. It's the presidents and the chancellors. And they would be strength of academics. So, you know, a school like Boise would probably not make it in, or maybe BYU doesn't make it in. And then the schools out West, whether it's Fresno or San Diego State or UNLV in Nevada, There's just not enough to offer the Pac-12. So if they were going to expand, they probably looked east to Texas and Oklahoma in that area. But I agree with you. At this point, I think it's more likely that they don't expand than they do expand. It's just too many hurdles to expand.
Yeah, too many hurdles. Remember, the purpose of expanding from an economic standpoint is to increase the value for the current members, right? So let's just take ASU and Arizona for a second. Right now, they're making about $24 million a year just in Pac-12 football and basketball regular season contracts. They're going to, in a couple of years, they're going to renegotiate those contracts, whether they expand or not. And that $24 million is going to turn into $35 or $40 million per year per school. So if you're going to add a team, Oklahoma State, Boise State, San Diego State, whoever, that team's got to come in and turn that $40 million for Arizona and ASU into at least $41 million, right? You can't bring a school in that is going to undermine the size of each piece of the revenue pie for the existing members. And when you're talking about that kind of money, there's nobody out there. And now that Oklahoma and Texas are off the table, there's nobody out there that is going to bring in that kind of money for the Pac-12's current schools.
John Wilner from the San Jose Mercury News, Pac-12 Insider, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Let's talk about the scheduling element of the announcement yesterday. Was intentionally very, very vague. We're not exactly sure what it's going to look like, but there has been some conversation already about perhaps shrinking the conference schedule commitment by the Pac-12, going from 9 to 8 games to create an extra slot to allow the scheduling of a Big Ten or an ACC team. How quickly, if that is indeed what's on the table, John, how quickly do you think something like that can happen?
Real tough, because almost every team is filled up with non-conference games for the next few years. Then if you're talking about creating spots by going to 8, going from non-conference games to 8, you know, you could do it, but you got to get, you know, ESPN and Fox have got to be on board with that. Then you've got to find, you know, you got to find the right matchups. I think something like that is going to happen, but it's going to be a few years away, 2024, 25, something like that. There's just too many moving pieces, all of which have contracts attached to them,
for
there to be all of a sudden, you know, Pac-12 playing only 8 games next season or the season after that. It's just too complicated.
John, I'll leave you with this. I really enjoyed the prediction piece you had the other day. You had ASU winning the Pac-12 South, facing Oregon in the championship game and losing to Oregon. So, obviously, you're pretty high on ASU this year.
Yeah, I picked ASU to win the division back in January, right? I mean, as soon as you kind of got a feel for what the rosters were going to be like. And, you know, I certainly have had I've had some doubts given what's going on over there.
Sure.
And certainly the injury on the defensive line is a pretty significant blow. But, I mean, they got a veteran quarterback. They got good lines of scrimmage. They got playmakers. They got, you know, the schedule is pretty manageable. I think this is the year. And, you know, frankly, this is the year they've been. If you kind of remove the COVID season from the calculation, this is the year that they kind of have been pointing to since Edwards got there. And so I think they got a great chance, but it's going to be a tough division. Utah, USC, and UCLA are all capable of winning it. Pac-12 South is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. John, it was a great conversation as always. Thanks for coming on for a few. You stay safe, and we'll talk to you very, very soon. Thanks for the time.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Got it. John Wilner, leading Pac-12 insider, San Jose Mercury News, joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Infinity, luxury cars, legendary service. Visit CoulterInfinity.com. The expectation has been we will see Isaiah Simmons playing this season right next to Zaven Collins as a linebacker. In reality, the reason they drafted Isaiah Simmons, we're going to see it a lot this year. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Let's get an update on the black sheep of the Kazell family.
Yeah, somebody's a brain surgeon and somebody's...
Brother works for Honeywell. Other brother, like, builds things that goes into space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Sarah,
and you work with us.
And here I am.
You're with us. You're with a couple of losers
Sarah
like the
you
Burns
what the
and Gambo show.
Score of the Diamondback game is...
Yeah, it's really important work that I do.
It's let's get an update on our Twitter poll question of the day with Sarah.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update presented by Sanderson Ford.
We'll tell you why this is the question in a minute, but what is our question so far today, Sarah? What's the result so far today?
Yeah, so we're looking at the Arizona Cardinals and Isaiah Simmons specifically, asking where he will have the biggest impact defensively this season. Not necessarily where you'll see him play the most, but where will he be the most impactful? Will it be at safety, linebacker, or cornerback?
Linebacker.
Okay. Easy enough for you two.
Yep. And easy enough for our audience as well, I imagine.
No question. 72% voted for linebacker, 25% for safety, and 3% for corner.
3%.
3.3%.
He played some slot corner in the Kansas City game. Like, they'll move him around depending on the matchups and depending what the other team. Are they going 11 personnel, 10 personnel, 12 personnel? It depends on what the other team does as to where he'll play.
At Burns and Gambo, one word on social media. That's where you can find Sarah. She's waiting for you on Twitter to follow us and converse with us and vote on our Twitter poll questions and things like that.
Yeah, follow us so I can feel good about my job for a day.
Pretty much. Yes. You can put something on your business card that rivals what your brothers have, because right
now
you
get to entertain people every day.
Yeah, what you do?
What do they do? What do they do?
What you do is important.
So they solve world problems.
Yeah,
they save people's lives to advance the world.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I mean, that's overrated.
So overrated.
Totally overrated. You make people laugh. You entertain people.
You educate people.
Yes.
Clown.
Yeah. One of my clowns.
Make them laugh.
Amuse you. The reason why this is a poll question today is it got kind of things stirred up a little bit on, you know, where else social media. And I'm not going to lie to you. I saw it, and I thought enough about it to put in the email to Gambo. And let's talk about this a little bit. Ryan Cody is the host of the Cardinals Locker Room show, I believe, on Channel 12. And he tweeted out this morning, Isaiah Simmons is not working with the inside linebackers today. He is instead working on coverage with the defensive backs. And that got a little traction this morning on social media. Like, ooh, he's working with the defensive backs. Does that mean he's going to play there more? Does that mean he's going to get more looks there? Cliff Kingsbury was asked about it today. It's specifically this report.
It looked like Isaiah was, the individual part of practice was with DBs at the beginning. I mean, is that by design just to get him some extra footwork?
It is, yeah. I mean, we're going to have him in different spots, and so he'll be covering at times, and we want to continue to work that, continue to work his pass rush stuff, continue to work his backer stuff. I mean, he's a guy who's going to have a very important, impactful role at a number of different positions.
So he's not just going to be in the middle next to
him. He'll be where we want him to be, you know, week in and week out, where we can put him to maximize him versus that opponent. We'll use him accordingly.
Yeah, this isn't new. Like, he practices with the defensive backs a lot. So this, like, yeah, I think maybe if you don't know that and you see that for the first time, maybe you're like, wow, he's playing with the DBs. He's a linebacker, but he practices with the defensive backs quite a bit.
And to be fair to him, Ryan, in this particular instance, to be fair to Ryan, I didn't know how much he was practicing
no,
with the defensive backs.
I'm not getting updates on a regular basis. You know, yeah, I mean, it's very likely you're not with it. You see it, but he does practice with the defensive backs on a pretty regular basis because he moves around a whole lot. He plays about five different positions for the Cardinals. Now, in college, he played nine, but with the Cardinals, he plays five. So, depending on what the other team throws out there, if they go to two tight ends, that means that they've got only two wide receivers. So they don't need him to help cover one of the tight ends. So he could be, at times he could be a safety, at times he could be a slot cornerback. He was a slot cornerback on several of those plays against Kansas City last week with Hardman. He was a slot cornerback. He could line up an inside linebacker. He could line up as a pass rusher at linebacker. So he's not going to have his hand in the ground lining up as a defensive lineman, but he could line up, you know, as a linebacker, as a slot corner, as a safety. He could cover wide receivers, running backs, tight ends. So his role is just a very versatile role. So it's not unusual that he gets reps with the defensive backs because they use him like that.
Yeah, Steve Keim, remember what he said after they drafted Isaiah Simmons?
I don't know that I've scouted many players like this. I tried to think about different comps. To have a guy that's essentially 6'4", 238 pounds, he ran 4.34 at the combine. When you watch him on tape and you see him play the deep middle, the deep half, you see him play in the box, you see him blitz, rush the passer. He's sort of a Swiss Army knife and does it all. And we call that kind of a player an eraser in this league.
Yeah, and I guess not knowing the specific practice habits of Isaiah Simmons and how often he runs with the linebackers and how often he runs with the defensive backs, I saw that tweet, and it was interesting to me just because, remember, when Steve Keim said that, that was right after they drafted him. We watched Isaiah Simmons play last year, and he wasn't much of a Swiss Army knife at all. He's not in the beginning of the season. He really struggled with the limited role they wanted him to play. By the end of the season, he was better. By the end of the season, he was flashing some of that versatility. But you see where I'm going with this is that year one of Isaiah Simmons, he barely played the first half of the season, and he was okay in the second half of the season. Has he advanced himself enough to the point where they can take full advantage of his Swiss Army knife-like abilities? I mean, are they there yet already? Because based off of what we saw last year, you wouldn't think they would be there yet with Isaiah Simmons. Are they there already now? Are they okay? Here he is, five positions. Go get him. He's going to be great at all of them. It seems like a little bit of a leap to me. That's all I'm saying.
I would say the answer to your question is yes, they're there. They'll play him at weak side linebacker. They'll play him in the slot. They'll play him, you know, over the tight ends. They'll play him at safety. They'll play him at, like I said, five different positions. He's not as physical as Zaven, so he's not going to be as great against the run as Zaven. Zaven's going to be better against the run because he's just bigger and more physical. But say you want to blitz Buddha. You could blitz Buddha, have Buddha come up into the box and blitz and drop him back into safety so he could play some safety there. Slot cornerback, yeah. Now, a lot of it depends. Is what do you see in 10 personnel, 11 personnel, 12 personnel? Is there one tight end? Is there two tight ends? Did I go four wide receivers or just two wide receivers? It all depends. But you need a guy that's versatile enough to stay on the field no matter what they do. And that's where, yes, I think he's arrived to that point that that's what they'll count on him for.
I hope so. Because I have high expectations for Isaiah Simmons. And not that they give a rip about my expectations for him. I'm sure they don't. He's the eighth pick in the draft.
Yeah.
He's the eighth pick in the draft. Isaiah Simmons better start showing some folks why this year. All right? I mean, that's...
One play last year that obviously stood out, the interception. But because he took him so long to get into regular playing time, He wasn't the defensive rookie of the year. He wasn't a candidate for defensive rookie of the year. He didn't play the way Patrick Queen did with the Ravens. What's wrong? Yeah, this is the year you expect him to show why he was worthy of that top 10 pick.
Because that's a big pick, and you just can't miss on guys like that. You just can't. Text the word Sparky to 620-620. Kick off the college football season with your favorite Arizona sports host and special guests for our Valley Virtual Series. It's presented by 72 Sold, where you can get a higher price. Plus, we'll be giving away college football tickets as well. Again, text the word Sparky to 620-620. DeAndre Ayton is eligible for a contract extension. So could the fact that a deal hasn't been made yet indicate that the two sides aren't close to agreeing on a number for a contract extension? We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Remember, it wasn't that long ago, just a couple of weeks ago, we had Kevin Pelton, our favorite NBA insider from ESPN. He was on with us, and we asked him.
We say that to all the NBA insiders. You're our favorite.
Well,
it's definitely Kevin Pelton, though, right?
I do kind of say that about Bobby Marks, too. But only because Bobby Marks was the guy who picked the Suns to beat the Lakers, and everybody else said the Lakers were going to win. Yeah.
Anybody else we say it about?
Those are the two we have on the most. Bobby Marks or Kevin Pelton. Well, Ramona.
Oh, Ramona.
Hey, Ramona, you're a favorite NBA analyst.
You are a favorite NBA analyst, yeah. Ramona. I said we say it about everybody.
My God, I'm a phony.
You are a fake.
I'm a fake. I'm just a...
You should be on the White Lotus.
God, woo! I'm just
an unlikable character.
Totally. Hey, man, you're the best. Thanks for coming on our show. Man, what a...
What a, you're our favorite NBA insider.
I'm a jerk.
Throwing finger guns. They can never see it, but.
You're the best. Bam. You're the best.
And I apologize. I'm at work to be a little more genuine of a human being.
You're our favorite from the Pacific Northwest, Kevin. There's nobody in the Pacific Northwest that we like having on more than you.
One of our favorite NBA insiders, Kevin Pelton.
Yes.
Was on with us about a few weeks ago and said it's very likely DeAndre Ayton gets the max contract extension.
I think so. And like I said, I think they, you know, maybe they draw the line at the fifth-year player option, but are willing to give him the 30% max criteria.
It was a really good article today on Bright Side of the Sun, a website we frequently get kind of inspiration from when it comes to things to talk about when it comes to the Suns. Bright Side of the Sun wrote about the extensions that DeAndre Ayton and Mikal Bridges could get. And of DeAndre Ayton, they wrote, and this is something I know you and I think it was Luke, who was filling in for me a few weeks ago, talked about specifically. Devin Booker, when he signed his max contract with the Suns, he got it within 5 days of free agency starting. It was almost immediate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, free agency's almost a month old. It hasn't happened yet with DeAndre Ayton, which has led Bright Side of the Sun to write, quote, the Suns clearly don't want to give him that yet or the deal would already be signed. Close quote. And I think that's fairly indisputable at this point. If the Suns wanted to max out DeAndre Ayton, they'd offer it to him, he'd take it, and it would be done. It would be, but it hasn't happened yet, which means the Suns are probably trying to offer him a little less to see if he'll bite.
Yeah, it means it's not the no-brainer that everybody thinks it is, right? It's not the no-brainer. Now, I think that DeAndre Ayton and his camp are fully expecting not a low ball offer, but I think they're expecting a max. And they've got a lot of examples. They could point to Bam Adebayo. They could point to Rudy Gobert to get 25% of the cap. Now, they could, you know, use those examples to put themselves in a position to say he's worth it. I think that they'll try to get the max. Now, here's the thing. I've talked to the Suns about this. There's time. Like, they don't have to get it done in August. They don't have to get it done in September. They might not even have to get it done in October. I believe you have to have it done by the first regular season game.
Okay.
So I think that that is what
October
I was 20th told.
October 20th then would be
Yeah, whenever that is. Whenever the first regular season, you have until then to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't get it done, obviously, like, if he says, if you're, like, adamant you're not going to give him a max deal, and he's like, I'm not signing anything that's less, it's a max, well, he doesn't have really any leverage. He goes into restricted free agency next year, and if any team makes him an offer, you just match it if you're the Suns. Now, the thing about matching a restricted free agent offer is the team that's making the offer cannot offer as many years as you can offer, and they can't offer as much money as you can offer. So you actually get him at a bargain. So if somebody makes him an offer in restricted free agency, you'd almost be like, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, because you just saved us a year, and you just saved us, you know, money. So I don't know that that's really the best thing that's going to happen either. And usually guys don't want to wait. So, like you were saying before, if it's 125, Karl Anthony Towns got 158. So maybe you are from 150. I think 125 might be low, but say you offered him $150 million. Is he going to really turn that down to try to make, you know, an extra 30, you know, over and it's not 30 over a year, it's 30 over 5 years.
Yeah.
So he could get, he can get 25% of whatever the cap is this year. So I'd have to look at the cap to get the exact number.
You don't need the exact number. It's
25% of the cap is what he is eligible to get. So if you offered him 140 and 150, it's very likely that he's not going to want to wait 2 more years to know that he's got that money coming to him.
Right.
It's unlikely that guys. So there's not a lot of leverage that DeAndre has outside of I'm not signing anything except the max. And, you know, listen, do I think he's worth the max? Probably I do. Yeah, you know, I do. But do I think he would take a little bit less? I mean, if it's not crazy less, yeah, probably.
Yeah, and that's the comp they kind of used in the story a little bit. And the reason I came up with $125 million is because that's what John Collins just got from the Atlanta Hawks. He got 5 years, $125, less than the max, still really, really good money. That's very hard to say no to. And I would imagine for DeAndre Ayton, it would be a matter of principle. It would be a matter of, $125 million is a crap ton of money for me to say no to. But I'm going to say no to it because I feel like I should be a max player in this league, and I'm gonna wait until I get that. I want that. There were two quote-unquote insiders who were interviewed for this article, Seth Partnow from The Athletic, and he said, look, I think the max is a little high, but it's not egregious. Bobby Marks kind of said the same thing. A max is a little high for Ayton at this point, but given what he did in the playoffs, it's probably fine to for the Suns to offer that to him. And as Bobby has pointed out on our show a couple of times, the cap's probably going to go up in a few years when the new TV deal comes in. So you might look at a max player now as a deal 3 years from now, 4 years from now, if the cap goes up a little bit. I think the biggest question about Ayton is, I know it's a negotiation, and I know the Suns would like to save as much money as they possibly can. DeAndre Ayton is a future cornerstone of your organization that proved his worth by how he played in the postseason. He's already shown that the next time you make the postseason, he's not going to have stage fright. He's not going to perform poorly. He established his value. Don't you want to kind of make sure he's happy and that feels like he's, you know, like he's Devin Booker, like I'm an invested part of the future of this organization? I think there's an element of that to this.
The organization's commitment?
Yeah, that the Suns have to be aware of. They don't want to nickel and dime too badly DeAndre Ayton. I think they want to make sure he feels appreciated and he knows that he is a future cornerstone for this organization. Keep him happy.
Yeah, he really came on this past year. I mean, and then what he did in the playoffs was nothing short of remarkable. There were several games where he was their best player and that they wouldn't have won without him. He's established himself as one of the best two-way bigs in the entire league. So, and he's still, 23 years old now? He's just so... So I think that you're in a great spot to lock him up long term and get that done. I'll be happy if they do it. And if I'm DeAndre, I'd like to do this now too. And I'm going to tell you another reason why. And this is why guys like to get these contracts done, you know, as quickly as possible. He's 23, just turned 23. If he could hit free agency again at say 28,
oh sure, just like Devin Booker's poised to do,
right. Yep. You cash in twice.
Yeah, just like Devin Booker's.
Don't play this year out and the next year. Like as soon as you could get your... There's a chance that because of his age, he could cash in big time twice.
Yeah.
And you want to try to get to that.
I mentioned Seth Partnow. He is quoted in the story that helping his team make the finals in their first opportunity says a lot. Quote, "You don't always know how young guys are going to respond. Guys coming into their rookie extensions, not a lot of them have been starters on finals teams," close quote. And that's the power DeAndre Ayton has. And look, I'm not some young, unproven commodity that you don't know anything about me. I just survived the gauntlet of the NBA playoffs and played really well for you most the entire time of that fight. I'm a known commodity that you can trust with a max contract. I expect he'll get it.
Mikhail's 2 years older. You know, Chris Paul's 30. I mean, he's such a big piece going forward.
Yeah.
That I almost think that you got to get it done.
Yep, I agree. When we come back, many believe that it's playoffs or bust for Cliff Kingsbury this season. And we talked about that quite a bit yesterday. Could the overall strength, though, of the NFC West division mean that Cliff has a little more leeway than us and I was giving him credit for? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.